This is special programming on the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. Tonight we'll discuss Governor Gavin Newsom's order yesterday for all Californians to stay home. We'll take a look at the predicted rate of spread for COVID-19 and the hospital capacity in the North State should those numbers come to fruition. We'll also hear about a local organization providing a grocery pickup for Chico residents. This is a time where we all need to stay connected, so please let us know what you're wondering about and give us your comments on our website, mynspr.org. For Friday, March 20th, 2020, this is special coverage from North State Public Radio. First, some news.
For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert. The number of positive coronavirus cases in California topped the 1,000 mark for the first time yesterday evening, according to the California Department of Public Health. There are now a total of 1,006 reported cases of the virus in the state. That's 331 more cases than were reported yesterday. Three more people died from the ailment between Wednesday and Thursday evening, bringing the death toll to 19 in California. Officials are awaiting the results from more than 11,700 additional tests. In the North State, Butte, Shasta, and other counties continue reporting no active known cases, though Yolo County today reported five. In other virus-related news, Sacramento officials are throwing a potential lifeline to those who opted to forego buying medical insurance and now regret that decision. With a global pandemic underway and new restrictions announced almost daily, State Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara ordered a new open enrollment period for purchasing health insurance, which started today. Americans caught up in waves of layoffs may lose their employer-sponsored health coverage. Typically, health insurance may only be purchased during designated open enrollment periods or following a qualifying event, such as a change in marital status. The special open enrollment period runs through the end of June. To learn more, visit the state's insurance marketplace, coveragecA.com. Reading City Hall has been closed to the public until further notice as of 10 this morning. The action was taken in compliance with the governor's shelter-in-place order. Mayor Barry Tippin said essential city services would continue without interruption, though matters such as building permits, payment processing, and customer service for municipal utilities will move to appointment only. The public will also be barred from Tuesday's meeting of the Shasta County Board of Supervisors. The meeting will be available online. The public can email comments to the board's clerk. Public hours at Oroville City Hall have been reduced to 3 hours a day on weekdays only. The building will be open from 8 to 11 in the morning from Monday through Friday. An annual student-led environment conference at CSU Chico scheduled for next week will be moved online. Speakers at the two-day event give presentations on land use planning and natural systems, sustainable agriculture, engineering, and supply chain management, among other things. The This Way to Sustainability conference will run Thursday and Friday. To register or find out more, search for the conference on the CSU Chico webpage. City Council members in Yuba City will hold a special closed session meeting tomorrow morning to discuss the crisis and threats to public facilities and services. The meeting gets underway at 9 a.m. Tomorrow's farmers market in Chico will proceed, but with precautions. Vendors will be spaced further apart and amenities that encourage people to linger, live music, tables and chairs, as well as a bicycle valet, won't be available. For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert.
This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. Citing alarming projections of the possible spread of the coronavirus in California, Governor Gavin Newsom issued an order for all Californians to stay home last night. But what exactly does that mean? NSPR's host of Blue Dot, Dave Schlom, spoke with Brad Alexander from the Governor's Office of Emergency Services to learn more about the new order, the broad view of the challenges with COVID-19, and to clarify some of the common misunderstandings. The first thing Schlom asked Alexander was, what's the difference between a stay-at-home or a shelter-in-place order?
Sure. So what the governor is asking is basically a lot of folks have been asking for this already, and we're just trying to make the direction consistent across all 58 counties, across the almost 40 million people that live in this enormous nation state, that we're asking them to do what the title says, stay home. Do common sense of avoiding those large groups, avoid contact in large parties, and to avoid unessential travel, unessential services, unessential meetings and gatherings. What a shelter-in-place order typically comes for in the emergency services world is when it's a act of war or an attack of some kind from a man-made source or an active shooter situation where you would ask people in a building to shelter in place or a community to shelter in place, possibly for a hazmat issue if a truck full of chlorine or something were to spill on a freeway. Sheltering in place would mean you'd be under your desk or you'd barricade a door or you would gather folks into a corner to get away from windows, those types of procedures where this order from the governor is not that at all. It's much more of a common sense approach to avoid germs, avoid contact in unfamiliar places, touching surfaces in places that you're not aware of when the last time they got cleaned, and also avoiding contact with folks who you're not sure of their health circumstances.
In rural areas like here in Northern California, what does stay at home look like for us? How is it different for like people in San Francisco and Oakland and Sacramento?
Yeah, I think this is going to look very differently between the rural and urban areas. In urban areas, you're pretty used to tight quarters and running into lots of people almost literally on a daily basis in places like San Francisco or downtown Sacramento or San Jose, Los Angeles. I also live in a rural part of the state, and sort of what we're calling for is stay-at-home or self-isolation is almost what daily life can look like in the most rural parts of the state, where you may not see your neighbors for weeks, if not just a few days. Certainly, we're asking that behavior to continue in rural or urban areas, probably going to be the most challenging in the most urban parts of our state.
Is there any kind of enforcement aspect to this? And because it sounds to me like, you know, the governor's just asking us all to use common sense right now. If there are, you know, people that are doing things like, you know, having massive gatherings at the beach or whatever, is there any kind of enforcement that might accompany that?
Yeah, so the first line of enforcement is what you heard the governor describe as the social contract out there, is it's basically peer pressure to abide by this order. And most folks are already doing this, avoiding these large gatherings, avoiding being out in public unnecessarily. And so we're asking people to step that up. If you see folks who are not abiding by the order, that you also, you know, encourage your neighbors to do the same thing, encourage your loved ones, encourage your coworkers, colleagues to do the same thing, to work remotely or communicate remotely as much as possible. Thankfully, we've got much more technology nowadays to make that happen than we would have if this was happening 30, 40 years ago, much more difficult. And the next tier of that would be possible enforcement from law enforcement at a local level. Obviously, we would all prefer to avoid that, and it would obviously be very challenging to do that across the state. So it's going to be instances where it's egregious and gross in negligence where you might see law enforcement engagement.
To complete this, I want to add that if we all do our part and have common sense and do stay at home, then you do flatten the curve, and then you don't have to have those catastrophic numbers happening, and that's why we all need to do this.
Yeah, so those numbers are to be a part of our advanced planning. So the goal is that we get participation from 100% of Californians, 100% of any visitors that may be within California during this time, to get those numbers to stay in an advanced planning document and not become a reality.
Well, Brad Alexander from the Governor's Office of Emergency Services, I know you guys are super busy. We appreciate your time today.
And thank you for the opportunity.
That was Brad Alexander with the Governor's Office of Emergency Services speaking with NSPR's Dave Shlom. Disturbing videos from China and more recently Italy show modern medical facilities overwhelmed, with medical professionals forced into tough decisions. They have to choose which patients are most likely to benefit from treatment, and sometimes which ones will be left to die, because there are not enough beds, ventilators, or other equipment to treat everyone. Fears that the swift-spreading virus could create a similar surge of patients in the United States is what's behind the governor's order yesterday, and what's been driving all the hand-washing, social distancing, and flattening the curve messaging you've been hearing.
We had a very candid and a sober, if not sobering, conversation about where we may be and where we need to go together.
That was the governor Tuesday, talking about meeting with officials from the state's major hospitals. He expects all 416 will experience challenges.
We need to prepare for the capacity that will ultimately transpire if our projections materialize as it relates to a surge.
He said medical facilities in parts of California are already under strain.
The hospital system in Santa Clara County is much more stressed than what's occurring currently in Alpine County or Butte County. Of course, what's happening in Alpine County concerns us as well, where they don't have those hospital assets and resources, and how do we provide them in real time?
Few hospital assets and resources are a concern for hospitals in all rural counties. And estimates of the percentage of people that will contract the virus range from 30 to 70%. In a letter to President Trump dated Wednesday, Governor Newsom projected that roughly 56% of Californians will become infected with COVID-19 over the next 2 months. He said current thinking is that between 5 and 20% of those that fall ill will require hospitalization. So what does that mean for the North State? Well, NSPR's Mark Albert crunched the numbers to try to figure out what sort of situation we could end up in if the virus spreads throughout the state as currently predicted. He's here in the studio with me. Thanks for joining me, Mark.
Thank you, Sarah.
So what did you find out? How many facilities are there?
I spent some time with the numbers over on a state database that tracks medical facilities. And according to the California Department of Public Health, there are 163 ICU beds and another 1,217 regular hospital beds in 23 hospitals across the North State. You see where I'm going with this?
Okay, that's starting to sound off a bit.
Yeah, if we stick with the governor's numbers, 56% of North Staters getting sick over the next 2 months, that's 392,000 cases. That's a bit less than twice the current number of cases worldwide just here in the North State. Now, the governor, quoting health experts, said between 5 and 20% of people coming down with it will need hospitalization. So that's just under 20,000 to a bit under 80,000 North State patients needing a hospital stay within 2 months.
Wow. So I'm sure there are not enough beds, but how many are we missing?
Well, at the low end, that's 20,000 people needing hospitalization. That's about 16 times the total number of hospital beds across the region. And mind you, most of the ICU beds are occupied by other patients on a day-to-day basis anyway. In normal times, hospitals and rural clinics can divert patients elsewhere. That may not be an option. Now, I was trying to think of a metaphor for this, like a freight train approaching or a tsunami. You know, something that because of its size, it looks like it's moving very slowly or it looks small until it gets really close. Anyway, I also spoke with Brad Alexander, spokesman for the California Governor's Office of Emergency Services, about his initial reaction to figures that Governor Newsom was putting out that 2 months from yesterday, 56% of Californians could be infected. Here's what he had to say.
When I first heard that, that was certainly very sobering for me and many of the public safety officials we work with here at the Office of Emergency Services across the state. That's a big number.
Now, Alexander said people shouldn't pour into emergency rooms unless it's really warranted, and that agencies are doing what they can to plan for the worst.
We have about a little over 400 hospitals across the state of California, and we are getting as creative as possible.
What he means there is hotels and motels and other spots for potentially isolating large numbers of people if there's a surge and a need for more capacity. And that goes along with the governor's request for one of the Navy's bigger hospital ships. Now, I think officials have been really put in a tough spot here. They want people to appreciate the seriousness and the potential of this being a real tragedy, but they also don't want to cause a panic. Let's go back to Brad Alexander.
I think the fact that we have a state of emergency in California across all 58 counties underlines the fact that we have a problem. All of these local public health agencies and administrative offices in every county and all the hospital systems, healthcare systems, are working to flatten that curve out as much as possible. The first step of prevention or preparedness starts with the individual. And that's part of why this order for stay at home is now in effect, that we need the help of every single Californian to help push that curve down as far as we can.
Okay, so really to protect ourselves, protect healthcare workers, it sounds like we really need to heed this order.
Certainly. I mean, those are wise words and really the only thing that we can do at this point.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
You're listening to special coverage about the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. Stay tuned. More just ahead. Special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. For weeks, physicians, public health experts, and some politicians have been decrying the seeming unavailability of testing kits for the coronavirus in the U.S. In media reports, experts say modern medicine is flying blind, fighting a virus that spreads before symptoms appear in a population where tests for the ailment are not readily available. Doctors and patients themselves don't know if they belong in quarantine. The availability of tests is a concern in the North State, too. Earlier this week, the North Valley Community Foundation announced it was pulling $250,000 from their own operating funds, not money donated to aid campfire survivors or other causes, to procure COVID-19 testing equipment on behalf of the Butte County Public Health Department. NSPR's Mark Albert spoke with David Little, Executive Vice President for Programs and Communications at the NVCF, about the planning and decisions that went into the purchase. He started by asking who took the initiative.
Initially, we reached out to the Butte County Department of Public Health, asking them where they needed help. And certainly one of the first things they identified was with testing and the lack of availability of testing. The biggest impediment was that they didn't have the lab machinery to do that, and they had to send out their testing samples to other counties, and this would help expedite things. And that's why we agreed to purchase the equipment for them.
Does it seem kind of strange to you that a charity is having to help out what really is a core government function?
What we always try to do is look for places where we can fill in where government doesn't help or insurance doesn't help and there's no other avenue but philanthropic dollars. That's what we identified as a problem here, and the county identified as a problem that they weren't going to get this equipment anytime soon, that it was really difficult to obtain, and so we stepped in.
Did you contact them first, or did they contact you, and how did this all come about?
We reached out to them initially. I think it was on Friday. It came together really rapidly. We reached out to a couple of sectors in town, the healthcare sector and the public health department at the county. The county got back to us on Saturday with their requests for certain things, the biggest of which was the laboratory equipment. And on Saturday, we had an emergency meeting of our board of directors and approved it right then.
That's incredible that you're able to move that fast. Now, obviously, these types of machines, equipment that can test for this coronavirus, must be in great demand globally. How soon will the Butte County Public Health Department obtain them and have them up and running?
So, in fact, we've already ordered the machine. Here it is on Wednesday, and we ordered them this morning. It'll take some time to get here. It will take some time to set up. It will take some time for the state to certify it, even though all that is expedited. We were told in the beginning it would be anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks before they're actually testing. But even if it is 4 weeks, one test 4 weeks from now is better than zero tests 4 weeks from now.
Once they are here, what advantage will those testing equipment provide the community?
The biggest is that we will be able to tell rapidly whether or not we have infected people in the community. The suspicion, of course, is that we already do, but just don't know it because of a lack of tests. So, like as I said before, any amount of testing will help, and this will allow us to do more on-site.
Once the lab equipment is up and running, will we know how many tests were ordered in the county, or will officials still be unable to obtain that total figure because physicians can send samples to private labs and the private labs are only required to notify health authorities when they get a positive result? I guess the reason why that's important is just looking at the ratio, number of tests to number of positives.
Sure. Based on my understanding, this will allow the county public health department to conduct its own testing and the private sector too can do its own testing. I don't think I'm qualified to answer that. I do know that the private testing will continue, but the county public health department will be able to conduct its own tests as well. I think it's important to note that the county public health department will still follow the CDC guidelines on who should be tested. For example, there won't be any drive-up testing where anybody who wants to get a test can take it. It's still difficult to get that test, and it has to come at the order of a healthcare professional, but the county will be able to do it here on site and here quicker than sending it out to somebody else. I also think when it comes to reporting the positive results, the county only hears of positive results that are conducted by anybody in the private sector. Of course, the number of tests it takes and the number of tests that come back positive or negative, they will share that with the public because that's part of their process. But for the private sector, it'll still be conducted privately and only positive tests will be reported back to the public.
It seems like news about the coronavirus changes hourly and the number of cases seems to be doubling every 2 or 3 days. Is there any concern that by the time this testing equipment is up and running, say 3 weeks or a month from now, that our medical facilities might already be overwhelmed and there might be a tremendous need for, say, ventilators?
There's definitely a concern about that. We don't know what's going to happen in 3 or 4 weeks, and we just thought it would be better to act now. If the equipment is not as useful by then, it can be used for other things and other public health emergencies down the line. So it's not like it will be a machine that has no use. But when it comes to just the COVID-19 testing, we thought it would be better to get it ordered and get it en route and get it closer to being used than if we wait to find out what the perfect solution is. Right now, there is no perfect solution available, and this was as close as we could get to it.
That was David Little, Executive Vice President for Programs and Communications at the NVCF, speaking with NSPR's Mark Albert. Organizations all over the North State are stepping up to help in whatever ways they can during this pandemic. That includes the Chico Salvation Army. NSPR's Ken Duvall spoke with Lieutenant Arwin Rodriguera from the organization earlier this week. He first asked her to talk about the new food pickup service they've recently undertaken to help people get the food they need without unnecessarily exposing themselves to the virus.
Normally on Tuesdays and Wednesdays at our 567 East 16th Street location from 1 to 3, we have a food distribution for low-income seniors and families. And so in order to be with public health guidelines and protect the most vulnerable and to support social distancing, we have transferred that into a drive-through pickup program. So people are able to come up, leave their windows up, show us their identification. We put food in the back in their trunk. So it limits contact. It gets the most vulnerable the food that they need, and the services, our services are able to still be maintained.
Fantastic. And who qualifies for the program?
We have low-income seniors and families. We typically ask for a proof of residency because we give out perishable food items. So we strongly encourage that. And people can qualify just by bringing their ID. Again, proof of residency because we are giving out raw items. And they can hold it up to the window when they come through the drive-thru, and our team will be able to just check it off.
How's the response been so far?
You know what? We have been able to maintain our current numbers. This past Tuesday and Wednesday, we've served about 475 individuals here locally. That's pretty on par for a normal week. So it'll be interesting to see what happens as this situation progresses. They're able to call in. So again, we want to support social distancing. They can call into our office at 776-1009, or they can show the day of Tuesdays or Wednesdays, 1 to 3 p.m., and bring identification and proof of residency. So that's a piece of mail, non-junk mail, just so we know that we're giving perishable items to someone who can refrigerate them, because we just want to keep them safe. For now, as we're just waiting for more information to roll out, we want to encourage people to go to our website, chico.salvationarmy.org. There's a donation link there. Right now, we're encouraging monetary donations because we want to limit foot traffic in our building, transfer services to drive through, and calls for the most part. And then as it's needed, that money would be available to do bulk food purchasing.
And I'm assuming your contact information is all on your website.
Absolutely. We want to encourage people to go to chico.salvationarmy.org. They can also follow us at The Salvation Army of Chico on Facebook for program updates.
Is there anything else you'd like people to know, Lieutenant?
We are going to be listing on our Facebook and website, The Salvation Army of Chico Facebook, chico.salvationarmy.org, updates to our program as we continue to evolve them based on the needs of the current situation. So just to encourage people to maintain contact, if you want to be a part of the solution and our work, we encourage you to check that out too. We're just so incredibly grateful to the community of Chico and all the support we always get.
That was Lieutenant Arwin Rodriguera with the Chico Salvation Army speaking with NSPR's Ken Duvall. And that's your program for Friday, March 20th, 2020. For more information about anything you heard, visit our website, mynspr.org. While you're there, we also want to hear from you. What are you doing to help your friends, family, and neighbors during this pandemic? Tonight's special coverage was produced by Mark Albert, Ken Duvall, Christian Solis, and Phil Wilkie. This episode was engineered by Cameron Ford. Thanks for being with us. I'm Sarah Bohannon, and this is special coverage on the coronavirus pandemic from North State Public Radio. We'll be back Monday evening at 6:30. Until then, stay safe, stay informed, and stay tuned.